Okay, welcome everybody. This week, today's what, February 20th, Rabbi Tuli Hartstock, and we're at Congregation of Unite Yisrael. I want to thank Rabbi Hartstock. I ask him a lot, and his schedule is very busy, so I want to personally really thank him a lot. It means a lot. And thanks everybody for coming.
Thank you, Harry. Erev Tov, good evening, everybody, and thanks for taking the time to learn. Appreciate the opportunity. So I'd like to spend a little bit of time focusing on in the 9 days, and this week there is a special Haftarah. We call it Shabbat Chazon, and the Medrash Eicha, just to start at the beginning, the very beginning of Medrash Eicha, these are the first words in Eicha Rabbah. Says Eicha Yashva Shlosha Nabu B'Lashon Eicha. There are three Nevi'im who gave their Nevu'ah using the word Eicha: Moshe, Yishaya, VeYirmiyah. Moshe Rabbeinu, Yishayahu, and Yirmiyahu. Moshe Amar Eicha Esa Levadi. That's in this week's parsha. Yishayahu Amar. Yishayahu said Eicha Hayta Lezona, which we are going to read on Shabbos. And Yirmiyahu Amar Eicha Yashva Badad, that we're going to read on Tisha B'Av. And this midrash at the beginning of Midrash Eicha is the source for why we read the Haftarah that we read this coming Shabbos. And sometimes we kind of take things for granted as like that's the routine, that's what we do, we're kind of used to it, but it's very poignant when we actually kind of stop and take note of the fact that we read this Parshas HaShavuah falls out right before Tisha B'Av all the time, and so you always have that sequence of these three Eichas. It is probably worth spending some time thinking about what these, what the pattern is. There are various Divrei Torah explanations of Moshe Rabbeinu's Eicha was when we were on in our kind of prime making our way, although it was a complicated journey, and Yishayahu that we're reading this Shabbos is actually precedent telling us that the Churban is going to come, and Yirmiyahu when we read Eicha is when it actually does come. But that's the basis for the Haftarah, and when we note that in the Haftarah they use the word Eicha, where actually does it appear? The message in this week's Haftarah is actually a very powerful social message, and I think that I'd like to do is anything really fancy as much as actually what seems like the pshat of what Yishayahu is trying to get at, and then to try to unpack that a little bit more through a Gemara. If you look at the Psukim in Yishayahu, it's a longer Haftarah, but the word Eicha just picked the parts. If you look at the second chunk, it says Eicha Haytal Zona Kiryan Emana, and if you just kind of eyeball, if you just take a look at the bold, you'll see these are the last psukim of the Haftarah, and it starts with Eicha Haytal Zona Kiryan Emana in that chunk, and it at the end, when we're thinking positively again, it also refers again to Kiryan Emana, as though those terms are actually bracketing that chunk of the Haftarah, and then ends with the famous term Tzion B'Mishpati Padev V'Shaveh HaBitzdaka. So I'd like to actually focus on the message of Yishayahu, because we often think of this period as focused on, obviously it's about Churban Beit HaMikdash, and we think about that in ritual terms, and it is, it's more than a little bit ironic that the message of the Navi Yishayahu that we read on this Shabbos, if we go back to a few psukim before, this is again is not the beginning, it's really in the middle of Haftarah, but you look at the beginning of that chunk, it says, Shimu Dvar Hashem Ktzinei Sdom, Hazinu Torat Elokeinu Am Amora. So it's calling out, we know that kind of term of Hazinu from Parshat Hazinu, that's the same kind of thing. It's saying Shimu and Hazinu in a parallel term and referring to Sdom and Amora. And the Navi is calling to listen to the words of Hashem, the nation who is like Sdom and Amora. When you think about Sdom and Amora, that is, if the idea of Yishayahu is to push the notion of Kiryan Emana, which for our discussion this evening, we like to talk about it as the just society, as creating a faithful city, which means we'll see actually what makes for a faithful city, because our intuition could be kind of doing mitzvos and all sorts of rituals. Sdom and Amora's fault, Sdom and Amora is the, it's almost like it is the Kiryan Ne'emana is what we should be, Sdom and Amora is what we shouldn't be. what's the definition of Sodom and Gomorrah? So if we remember the story, it's about basic hospitality and the fact that they were not fulfilling basic hospitality, which means that the focus of this Haftarah is not about the Be'olam L'Makom side, which we often associate with the Beis HaMikdash and Karbanos and things like that. It's actually very much about the society that we're supposed to build that we have failed in building. And the Navi says, Lamali Rov Sifrechem Yomar Hashem, which reminds me as I'm looking at this, meant to note that I printed this with Shem Hashem, so I'm going to collect these and dispose of them properly because this one remained in. Lamali Rov Sifrechem Yomar Hashem, Savati Olot Elim V'Chelev Mer'im V'Dam Parim U'Kvasim V'Atudim Lo Chafatzti. Basically saying, I have enough of your sacrifices, I actually don't want any of your korbanot. Ki tavo le'ra'ot panai, mi bikesh zot mi'achem ramos chatzerai. Just to review these famous psukim, you're bringing all these sacrifices, I'm not interested in the sacrifices that you're bringing. Lo tosifu ebi minchat shav, ktorit toivahi li, don't bring me these korbanot mincha, they are in vain. I'm not interested in the sacrifices. Chodesh v'Shabbat kro mikra la'uchal aven v'atzara. I'm not interested in your Rosh Chodesh. I'm not interested in your Shabbos. I'm not interested in the things that you're bringing. Chad sheichem mo'adechem san'a nafshi. The holidays that you're celebrating, to me, I hate them. Hayu alai la'torach il'eiti naso. It's unbearable. The words are extremely powerful and basically saying, you're doing these things for me. I'm not interested in any of what you're offering. And the message of what appears again a couple of times in the Nevoah, but just to read that closing section of where Echa actually appears, Echa haital zona kirya ne'emana. Kirya ne'emana is faithful, and the zona is the unfaithful, and how this faithful city, Yerushalayim, has become an unfaithful city. What should be Malayati Mishpat, what Yerushalayim is supposed to be about is Mishpat, is justice. Tzedek Yalinba, Tzedek should rest there. What's the status of Yerushalayim? Now Yeshayahu is saying, decades before the Churban happens, but just already at that point, the status now is Meratzchim. It is totally corrupt. It can be corrupt, it can be murderously corrupt, and that's the critique that Yeshayahu is delivering. Kaspei chayal sigim, your silver has become dross, it's rusted. Saveich mahul b'mayim, your wine is mahul b'mayim, it's been diluted, meaning everything that is beautiful, the silver and wine that represents Yerushalayim, is actually diluted and spoiled. Sarecha, your officers, sorerim, means to be sar, they're off the path. And this is a this is a critique of the political leadership at the time. Chavrei ganavim. It is a collective, it's an association of immoral people. Kulo ohev shochad, rodev shalmonim. You're going after money. Yatom lo yishpotu, viriv almana lo yavo alehem. Meaning, you don't pay attention to the yatom v'almana, to the people who are oppressed. Lachay, that's the criticism. And then the Nevoah ends with, Lachay ne'um Hashem tzvakot abir Yisrael. This isn't the end. It's going to be brought back. But what does it mean to be brought back to the way that it was? Just the pshat of the psukim with nothing fancy is actually saying something that is enormously important, right? The idea of your Ben Adam L'Makom is not what I'm looking for. It's creating a Kiryat Ne'emana Ir HaTzedek. And the definition of an Ir HaTzedek, the words that the Navi uses a couple of times is Mishpat, Tzedek, Tzedaka. Those are the terms. And in that sense, the end of the Haftarah says, Tzion B'Mishpat Tipadeh B'Shaveh B'Tzedaka. Again, those words of Mishpat and Tzedaka. So what I would like to point out, first, just on the face of it, the message is clear. We can do lots of mourning on Tisha B'Av for our lost Beit HaMikdash, the Navi Yeshayahu, we don't always do the mourning for, you know, what is a real, a just society and what are our responsibilities in terms of creating that kind of society. The term Mishpat and Tzedakah in terms of the Torah's teaching is actually a foundational term in the following way. Just to bring two examples of Psukim, but you find it not so often in Chumash, but you find it in a really fundamental place in Chumash, and you find it lots of times in Navi. When Hashem is choosing Abraham in Sefer Breishit, the Torah describes, Hashem says, do you know why it is that you were selected? So the Pasuk says, Ki dativ, because I know about Avraham Avinu, Pasuk says, it's Parshat Vayera, Ki dativ leman asher yitzave et banav ve'et beito acharav v'shamru derech Hashem lasot tzedaka u'mishpat. When the Torah describes why it is that Avraham Avinu was chosen, it's because I know that he's going to teach his children and the generations after him to do tzedaka u'mishpat. Leman hevi Hashem al Avraham et asher diber elav, so that which Hashem promises Avraham will actually occur. Similar, although the reverse, Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael, when David was king over all of Israel, Vayhi David oseh mishpat utzdaka l'chol amo. So this term of tzedakah or mishpat utzdaka is foundational in that it appears lots of times in Tanakh. It's the Torah's description of why it is that Hashem chose Avraham. It's the source of why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And it's what the Nebuah is saying has to be brought back in order. Now, the Gemara actually doesn't understand what Mishpat and Tzedakah means. Gemara thinks it's an oxymoronic term. I don't quote the Gemara here, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin actually says, what does it mean? What do you think the Gemara is troubled by in the idea of Mishpat Tzedakah? Gemara thinks it's it's like that. So it's an internal contradiction. Mishpat means Midas Adin. It's the law. What's Tzedakah as we associate it? Like when we think of Tzedakah? Naturally, what we would think that Tzedakah is compassionate. Even when we talk about Midas Adin and Midas Harachamim, when we talk about what's true by law, we know what the Torah wants, so it's not like I'm setting up a straw. But when we think about the notion of Mishpat and the notion of Tzedakah, if we really think about it conceptually, the Gemara says, B'makom Mishpat ain't Tzedakah, B'makom Tzedakah ain't Mishpat. How can you hold on to both of those at the same time? If I have a court case in front of me and one person is wealthy and one person is not, it's an issu d'oraisa to be compassionate. I have to paskin based on the law. But I also can't favor people who are... So how do those two things stand together at the same time? The Gemara actually says... Gemara acknowledges that question. The Gemara says, what is Mishpat and Tzedakah at the same time? Gemara says that's Pshara. Gemara says that arbitration is basically the idea of Mishpat and Tzedakah at the same time, because it's actually, what is arbitration? It isn't the law. It's actually arriving at some kind of compromise, and it's not the law. The point for us is that's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, and that's about, it's a different sugya. Actually, there are whole societies. I think in America, I remember Adam Berner, if you know him, works in arbitration professionally, and he says that there are countries, told me that there are countries, in America, law comes first, arbitration is an alternative to law. If I remember him correctly, it's a long time ago, I don't know if it's still true, but in like Australia, arbitration is the first way to go, and if you can't arrive at that, then they'll pass in based on law. Meaning, you can create whole societies one way or the other. That's all an aside. What does it mean in Tanakh, Mishpat Tzedakah? The Tanakh, according to Bible scholars, they don't think it's a contradiction. They actually think it is. There's a fancy word for this. Moshe Weinfeld is a Tanakh professor in Hebrew U for a long, long time. And he writes, the concept of social justice was expressed in ancient Israel and in ancient Near East by means of a hendiadys. That is a fancy word. The idea of a hendiadys is two words that come together to indicate one idea. So he says, the most common word pair to serve this function in the Bible is Mishpat, Tzedakah, justice and righteousness, or it's Dakar Mishpat, righteousness and justice. I put down so that I wouldn't like forget to think of an example. I would naturally like ask you, like, what's an example of a hendiadys? This is like a rhetorical device. But if you think of like blood, sweat, and tears was the example that was in my head, that's like, what does that mean? Blood, sweat, and tears. When you say that it, you know, if somebody did something with blood, sweat, and tears, you don't mean that there was blood, and that there was sweat, and that there were tears. What do you mean? It's like three different words that mean one idea, which means that you gave it your all, and you know, to the point of, like, I couldn't go on anymore. I gave it everything that I had. Or when you say that something is, like, nice and hot. So in language that we use, what does nice and hot mean? It doesn't mean that it's nice and it's hot. It means that it's really hot, just the way that it should be. So not to make light, right? But the idea of mishpat utzdaka is a hendiadys. The idea of that means that the society that the Torah is actually asking us to generate, to create, is one where the law is actually compassionate. Where you're creating a law that is compassionate. What's an example of that? So a bunch of years ago, a different, I think Parshas here probably, I think that loans in the Torah are an example of that. It's a sidebar. I'm just going to kind of raise it so you can tell me if this like makes sense. But is it fair to, according to Torah law, if you think about loans, is it fair to charge interest? Does it make sense? Is it ethical to charge interest when you when you lend money? So it's actually, is it moral? The Torah says it's usser, but it's actually it's something wrong with it. I rent a car, I rent my money. It's really the same idea, right? The Torah idea of a loan is one where, by right, I should think one thing, but the Torah is telling me, don't think that, in order to create a compassionate society. So the Torah of loans is like a whole other kind of topic, but just to draw it as an analogy, the Torah says, if you lend somebody money, you're not allowed to charge interest. If you lend somebody money, that person is going to give you the collateral. You're not allowed to go into that person's house. You have to be prepared to lose the loan. The whole idea of Shemitah Ksafim is tzedakah is meaning loans are actually a form of tzedakah. In capitalist society, loans are a form of you make money through loans, and in the Torah, you actually create a compassionate society through loans. Mishpat utzdakah, is that a coherent idea? Or does that need clarification? Like, the idea of a loan in the Torah is an example of the Torah actually trying to push the notion of creating a compassionate society. There are numbers of different examples of how a just society is, and the Torah is actually about different things that will, according to the letter of the law, what you would intuit as being the letter of the law, should be fine. And the Torah says, no, you have to actually push yourself in order to be able to create a particular kind of society. What I'd like to do is, next, learn a Gemara that's actually not related directly, but actually serves as an interesting example. If loans would be a particular kind of example, this is actually about the responsibility to protest when you see something that is wrong, which we'll start in a second, Max.
Yeah, I think that you set it up as tzedakah is compassion, because we're so used to that tzedakah compassion. Maybe that's a problem which we are misinterpreting, because the Red said that tzedakah is really just righteousness more intuitive, but we've sort of skewed that word and made it like building a mitzvah. This was doing a good deed. I heard the shepherds said, no, this was a commandment.
Yes.
And that may have happened globally with the words tzedakah.
Definitely happened. That's 100% for sure the case. Tzedakah and tzedek is the same word. Mishpat, tzedakah, and Tanakh go together. The idea of giving charity is a willingness to give up of your... It's the right thing to do.
The right thing to do from a deal perspective.
Charity is actually a Christian word, which means something different. It actually comes from caring about. It's a karita. I don't remember the root, but it's actually above and beyond the law. And in the Torah, it's actually not above and beyond the law. It is the law, and the idea of it being the law, we think about it as a mitzvah, so that it's like the law should be this, but I have a mitzvah, so I'm going to do that. It's like, no, the Torah is actually saying that's the law. That's why it is the mitzvah. That's what it means to create a certain kind of society. When you think in those terms, you can follow what you would think morally should be the law and have an unjust society. And the Torah is actually trying to push for something else. With that as background, yeah.
So I just learned that word, you know, 3 minutes ago. But at least as I understand it, the point is not to just two words to express one idea, but it's a contrast. It's the and in contrast to if you would say nicely hot or what the thing from Macbeth, a furious sound. So we have one word that's subordinate to the other. So you're not just expressing one idea; you're expressing the two words as maybe equal in the thing, as opposed to, I don't know what the equivalent would be, righteous justice or just righteousness.
Yeah.
So they're two equal poles.
It's true. You're right. I actually don't like, I always, whenever I think of it like something like nice and hot, that I always look at, I've like done this a bunch of times, I look it up, because, and the example that they'll often give in online dictionaries, like nice and hot, and I don't like it for that reason, because it's not, if I'm understanding you correctly, it's not like an adjective, it's not a, you know, nice and hot is different than two strong terms that are connected
to
each other.
I mean, at least as I understand it, maybe this is what Weinfeld says, that it's not like one's modifying or supporting to the other. They're two concepts, two distinct concepts that maybe fuse into one, or, you know,
it's
not that one is subordinate to the other.
Right, it's not. But when they fuse, it makes something that's different than either one when it's standing on its own. And the Tanakh scholars say the Gemara actually was like understanding that differently than what it would mean in the Pshat of the Pasuk. Yep.
I was just
going to
say that you started with Sedona, and the idea that the reason that Tzedek is so necessary with me is because you could look at Sedona, you could say they were a society governed by rules. They had laws. Those were Mishpat. You broke the law, you faced a consequence. When you don't have Tzedek next to Mishpat, you get Sedona.
Yes, exactly. But that is the Pshat of the Pasuk. That's right. And and as a reminder, in Pirkei Avos, when it says, right, Shali, Shali, V'shalach, Shalach, is midas stone. Like when you say, like, what's mine is what yours is yours, that's not how Jews are supposed to think about their stuff. We do. I'm not saying it's a tzaddik. So that's why but you think about, you know, Tisha B'Av and what it's actually, what the Navi is actually trying to push for, that's a very different thing to be thinking about if that's actually what the message of the Eicha is in the Nevuah. It is that. So with that in mind, if it's okay, I want to, like, do a different kind of example of the same idea based on a Gemara in Shabbos that is when I used to, you know, they're like phases in my Gemara learning life, I guess, and you know, there's a long chunk of time where learning Gemara is about like lomdus and ideas and concepts, you know, but the sugya of the Gemara, like the way a whole, just the shot of the Gemara from the beginning to end and the different pieces of it is like, I find very fascinating as a source, meaning not just of like lumbus and halacha and concept, but actually almost like machshava kind of thing if you actually read it through. So what I'd like to do is read through this a Mishnah and a chunk of Agadah and watch how this kind of idea gets, an example of this idea actually gets worked through in the Gemara. The context, as is like classic in the Gemara, is like as far away as you can imagine from being something that would address, you know, just society. The fifth parak in Shabbos is actually talking about, it's called the Bameh Behema Yotza. It's about what animals are allowed to carry out. When animals walk out into outside of Rishus HaYachid, the halacha is that animals, right, remember the Aseres HaDibros, it's not only that we have to rest, our animals have to rest, everything within our house, our children, our avadim, our animals all have to rest. So the Mishnah is talking about what's an animal allowed to go out with in the outside of Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos. So the Mishnah quotes amongst, like, oh, this is the fifth Mishnah, I think, in the Perek. It says a whole bunch of things that ain't yotzei, not allowed, the animals not allowed to walk out with. And then two of the examples, the Mishnah says, are usser is lo para be'or ha-kapar. Kapar is a hedgehog. And the or ha-kapar, it's actually a prickly. And so the owners of cows would put the skin of a hedgehog on the udders of the cow so that animals or others would not, animals basically would not be able to just drain the cow of milk when it was just standing there. So it was like a protection. So the Gemara, the Mishnah is actually raising, is that problematic for an animal to go out with that on Shabbos? Ritzua Shebein Karneha is, they would have, it's like an, kind of an adornment. If you have like the cow show, like you have a dog show, they would have a ritzua between the horns that would just be a beautifying element of the cow. So is your cow allowed to walk out on Shabbos with that? And the Mishnah says it's usser. Next line, last line, this Mishnah says, Paraso shel Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Haisa Yotza biritzua shebein karneha shelo b'ritzon chachamim. The cow, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, would walk outside of a Shusarabim, shelo b'ritzon chachamim. The chachamim actually, and the chachamim thought that was wrong. That's the Mishnah. It's actually, if you think about the, if you kind of look at the language of the Mishnah, but what's the halacha? Is there a machlokas in this Mishnah? The first opinion says that it's usser. What's the last line of the Mishnah say? I mean, what would you normally expect in a Mishnah? If Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah disagreed, what would it say? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says it's mutter. What does this Mishnah say? The cow Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would walk out that way, shelo b'ritzon chachamim. So the Gemara actually notices that and is troubled by that. It's like, is this the cow's opinion? Is it, was it b'ritzon Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? If it's b'ritzon Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, why does it just say Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said it's mutter? Why wouldn't it say that? You get the textual thing here that's strange? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, like, as follows. Parasa Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Gemara says, it quotes the line in the Mishnah. Parasa Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Where it says, V'chada para havyale. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah have just one cow. V'amarav. V'amilah amarav Yehuda amarav. Shresar alfe egle having the asr of Elazar ben Azariah me edre kol shasa v'shasa. Elazar ben Azariah would give for maser behema. He would give 13,000 agalot every year, which means that he has 130,000 cows. Whatever that is, it's much more than one. So what's the Gemara's question? Why is Gemara talking about paraso shel Elazar ben Azariah? He had lots of cows. We would say, or commentaries actually say in reading the text of the Mishnah, that's one way of asking the question. A different way of asking the question is, why is the language of the Mishnah written that way, that it's the cow Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah that would go at Ritzua Shebein Shelo B'Ritzon Chachamim? So Gemara says, Tana, they learned, Lo Shelo Haisa. It actually was not Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's cow. El Shel Shechinaso Haisa. It actually belonged to his neighbor. Umitoch shelo michaba nikres al shmo. That changes the story. What's the Gemara saying? It's a story with this cow. It actually was not Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's cow. And why is it written in that language? Because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is responsible. Why is he responsible? Because he saw something that was wrong. The cow went off the derech. And he didn't, not his cow, his neighbor's cow. And he just saw it and didn't protest. It's a funny thing. That's what the Gemara infers. But in the Gemara's way, it sets the Gemara off in the following discussion. It says, Rav, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chaviva, Masnu. These four Amoraim taught as follows. Kol misha efshar limchot l'anshei beso v'lo micha. Anybody who has the capacity to protest is literally what micha means, right? If you have the capacity to point out a wrongdoing in your family, and you don't, nitfas anshei beso, you are responsible for your family. The anshei iro, if is something in your city, and you don't protest, nitfas al anshei iro, you are responsible for all the people in your city. Bechol ha'olam kulo, something that's happening anywhere in the world, nitfas al kol ha'olam kulo. So the Gemara takes this line, in the strange line of the Mishnah, asks a question, gives an answer, and then starts to go to town, saying, okay, this is actually a principle. If something is wrong, you have an obligation to protest. If you don't protest when you see that thing that is happening, it's your responsibility. You own that. And for the first sentence, any thoughts about that or comments? Just because it requires a little bit of unpacking as a principle. That's true. I just want to also point out, I think it's important, the Gemara, when it does this kind of thing, it ended the comment on the Mishnah, and now it's discussing that principle. So you have to think about it as an abstraction. It's like the Gemara saying, if something is happening that is wrong, and you don't say anything about it, you bear responsibility. Obviously, in the realities of the world, there are all kinds of messiness with it. But you can take that as true, and also say, okay, but like in the abstract, if somebody's doing something wrong and I don't say something about it, is that on me? Well, Gemara's saying actually it's on you.
To go through this whole process where they listen to me and all that, and if you conclude no, then it's a waste of time. Conclude possible, then the responsibility is there.
In terms of tochacha,
yes.
Right, like bat mitzvos and stuff like that, yeah. So it's interesting, actually, that our heads go, because it's Shabbos and the example in the Mishnah, so our heads go to mitzvah kinds of things in tochacha in that sense. There can be all different kinds of wrongdoing. Like, I work in a school. Like, a kid can do something wrong to another kid, and a kid who's standing by says, like, I didn't do anything. I know you didn't do anything. Did you see what was happening? So is it my responsibility? Actually, do I have to get involved? Is that my job or not? And just to go through to see the Gemara, I think you kind of have a sense of the question. The next side on the base says, sorry, Benna.
Is this just Ben Amachavero, which is sort of your focus?
Right.
It doesn't say
it's Ben Amachavero? You say?
It doesn't limit it to him.
Oh, no, it doesn't limit it at all. No, right. Yeah. Do you think you'd have a lot of support if it was Ben Adam Lachavero and you open your mouth?
Well, other people could agree with you. One thing that's your business, maybe, and something that's not necessarily your business.
Yeah, I imagine that if we actually opened it for the conversation, which I think it's a good conversation to have, but I can do right now, it's like, I can imagine people, like, I don't know, what do you think is your business? Is it your business with somebody's Ben Adam Lachavero, or I don't know what you call, financial, there are all kinds of like categories of things. And is it my business or not? I think the Gemara is actually just making a claim. I understand that it's complicated. I understand that it's not, right, and I could do it in four. But the Gemara is actually making a claim that it is my business, what is happening somewhere else. Who's the my is actually not clear. If you look at the next line, top of the base, Gemara says, Amara Papa, Hani Debeirish Galusa Mitfasu Akule Alma. The person who is in the Reish Galusa's house, meaning the people who are in the exilarch's home, like that crew, they're responsible for the whole world. Who is the exilarch? That's a political person who's politically in charge. It's actually not a rabbi, it's a political leader. And it says he's responsible for the whole world. The Gemara continues. In our Gemara, it actually says, Ki Had De Amarab Chanina. But the actual Girsa of the Gemara is not a ki ha de, but it's an Amar Rab Chanina, Mai Dichsiv Hashem B'Mishpat Yavo Im Ziknei Amo B'Sarav. What does it mean that Hashem is going to judge, is going to bring Mishpat on Ziknei Amo B'Sarav? Rab Chanina says, you got to read that pasuk carefully. There are two groups here, Ziknei Amo and Sarav. Im Sarim Chatu, if the political leader sinned, Zikeni Machatu, what did the rabbis, what did they do? Ela Ema Az Kenim Shilomichu Bisarim. So, first of all, according to this line of the Gemara, we're not saying that every individual necessarily, that's like a whole other level, right? But the Gemara is saying, if you think about just societies, so political leaders have the capacity to make a difference. And the rabbis actually are different than the political leaders. And the Gemara here is saying that Rapapa actually says the Reish Galusa is responsible to make sure that the society you're living in is just. And Rab Chanina says, actually, that is the Reish Galusa, the Sarav's job, but it's actually the Zakenim's job, even if it's not their role, but if they stand by and don't say anything when they see something wrong, that's a problem. That's the halacha. Just in the interest of time, if I can, I'm going to try to move on. Very often the Gemara does it like it'll say the halacha, and then it's going to quote a story. So here's a story. Rav Yehuda v'Yosef kamei to Shmuel. Rav Yehuda was sitting before Shmuel. Asayahu itza katsavcha kamei. There's a woman who came, and she screamed. She was complaining. She was saying something before him. V'lohavi mishkach ba. Rav Yehuda is the student. Shmuel is the rabbi. And a woman is coming in and complaining, yelling in front of the two of them learning together. And he, Shmuel, didn't listen to her. Amar Le is Rav Yehuda, the student, says to Shmuel, the Rav, Lo Savar Le Mar, does Kvodo, the Rebbe, not believe that Otem Azno Mizakad Dal, somebody who closes his ears from the cries of the poor, Gamhu Yikra V'lo Ya'aneh, he will also cry out to Hashem and not be answered? Meaning Rav Yehuda is saying, how, I understand what you're learning, but how can you not be paying attention to the woman? Amar Le, so Shmuel says to Rav Yehuda, Shinina, that's kind of means a couple of possibilities what it means, but it probably means like Rav Yehuda was very sharp and brazen, and it means like kind of wise guy. Reshech Bikariri, your Rosh, that's me, meaning your teacher, is Bikariri, I'm going to get punished in cold water maybe, but Resha Dereshech, the person who's in charge of your Rebbe, meaning me, the person who's in charge of me, Resha Dereshech Bechamimi, he's going to get punished in boiling water. What does that mean? Shmuel said, Hayasid Marukva Av Beis Din. Marukva is sitting in the court. If she has an issue, she can go to Beis Din, and Marukva is going to take care of it. Dichtiv, and he quotes a pasuk, Beit David, Komar Hashem Dino Levaker Mishpat, Datzilu Gazul Miad Oshek Pentetzek Eish Chamatiyu Ba'arav Eim Chadav Liru Amalei. I'm not going through the pasuk. What's the exchange that's going on here? Now, Shmuel says, it's not my problem. I'm learning. It's Beit David's problem. Go, there's a Dayan, and the Dayan's job is to take care of it. It's not my responsibility. So that's a very sharp exchange between Shmuel and between Rabbi Yehuda and Shmuel with this nameless woman who is standing on the side. If you jump down to the bottom, to the third source from the end, there is a Gemara in Baba Basra, and this read of this Gemara comes from Aryeh Cohen, a professor in California, and he quotes this Gemara to explain this Gemara. Gemara in Baba Basra says as follows: Yad Yosef Breid Rav Yeshua Chalash. Yosef Breid Rav Yeshua got sick. Ingid, and he basically passed out. He was like not feeling well, and he was on the brink of death. He had a vision, whatever it was, because he was on the brink, and he came back. Amar Le Avua, and his father said to him, "My Chazis, what did you see?" Amar Le said to him, "Olam hafuch ra'isi. I saw an upside down world." If you've ever heard somebody say it's like an olam hafuch, right? It comes from like this line. It's like people say today, like the world is like backwards. Elyonim lamata tachtonim lamala. I saw the people who are high up down at the bottom, people who are lower at the top. That's the exchange. Tosfos on that Gemara says as follows: Elyonim lamata v'tachtonim lamala. Heyish Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel said the amru hageonim shekabal biyadam. The Gaonim explained this Gemara based on a Kabbalah that they had. Rav mi pi rav, from one generation to the next. The olam hafuch, what does it mean that the world is upside down? It's an upside down world. What did he see when he was sick and had this vision, this hallucination? Shera'a Shmuel, Davi Yasiv, Kamed, Rav Yehuda, Talmidei. he saw that Shmuel the Rav was learning up in Shamayim in front of Rav Yehuda, who was the student. Why? Because Rav Yehuda criticized, stood up to Shmuel when Shmuel was ignoring something that with this woman who is by Itza, the Asi Vitzafa coming to Shmuel Bel Ashkachbe, Amalei Rav Yehuda, Lesley Lamar Otimaz no Mizah Kazdal. I find this Tosos like an amazing Kabbalah. Right? The vision that he had was about Shmuel, who was silent, and Rav Yehuda, who stood up to his Rebbe, and in Shemayim, Rav Yehuda became the Rebbe, and Shmuel became the Talmud, because he stood up, to which the Gemara, then if you go back to our Gemara, the Gemara is saying that in story form, what the Gemara is saying initially in halachic form, that you have an obligation when you see something that's wrong to stand up and say something. The Gemara then goes in the third form, going back to number three. If the first was a halacha and the second was a story, the third is going to be a drasha. Amalei Rav Zeira Rav Simon. Rav Zeira, who's a student of Rav Yehuda, I think that is not by chance. Rav Zeira says to Rav Simon, "L'chinu mar lahani debei reish galusa." So Rav Zeira says to Rav Simon, the house of the reish galusa was doing something wrong. And Rav Zeira says to Rav Simon, "Why don't you go? You should say something. They're doing something wrong. You should say something." Amar le, lo mekablai minai. They're not going to listen to me. So why should I say anything? Amar le, he said, "Afal gav de lo mekable lo hakinu mar." Even if they're not going to pay attention, even if they're not going to listen to you, you have an obligation to actually say something and protest. Here's a long drasha from Pesukim in Yecheskel that actually talks about, we're going to end up running out of time here, but for the three points, if you put them, the Gemara says a halacha, if you don't protest against something when it's wrong, you're responsible. It derives that from the odd case in the language of Mishnah here. Quotes a story, which is pointing to kind of the greats and how you have an obligation to stand up. And then it teaches that you actually have an obligation to say something, even if you think it's not going to make a difference, because that's what you have to do. You just have to be able to make yourself heard. You have to actually say it out loud. I'm going to skip the drasha, and I just want to close with the last line, because on Tisha B'Av we learn Kamtza Bar Kamtza. That's the Gemara, the sugya that we talk about all the time. The Kamtza Bar Kamtza story is actually about, right, Kamtza and Bar Kamtza and the Suda and his invite, whatever the thing is. And then the key line in that story is Amar. I forget who's who. Kamtza? Hoil v'hava yasvi rabbanon v'lo machube. Since the rabbis were sitting there and they didn't protest when this thing was happening, shma mina kanichalu. Apparently they thought it was okay. Ezel echle be'kritza be'malka. And then the rest of the story ensued. So the idea of actually being moche, of protesting, is a central part of what it means to have a just society is exhibited in that sugya. It's actually really a big part of what this haftar is about, and it's actually at the core of what the Kamtza Bar Kamtza story is, but just in a different kind of example of it in the story in Shabbos. Stop here. Thank you. I'll take the
next week
sheets.
Is Tisha B'Av, so we'll take care of Myrav is in 2 minutes.
Thank you.
No, I'm coming. Yeah. Come on in. I'm done.
You tell?
Yeah, right here, right here. So, come on in. Hello? Hello? Is there a theater?
Maybe the other
one. But they have a minion there, right? They have a minion there? Do they have a minion there? Do they have a minion already there?
They have a minion. They have a minion.
Yeah, 10. Okay.
I'm going to go to the next one.